Hello and welcome to Everything in Between, the podcast where a dad and daughter duo delve deep into topics ranging from true crime to paranormal occurrences to urban legends and, well, everything in between. I'm Emma.
I'm the dad.
That's Anish. And it is our 80th episode. Yay!
Yay. No, I mean, that's cool. I just think that
20 away from 100.
It's hard to get excited about anything is really what it is.
That's
because
true. But we can get excited for our 100th.
Yeah, if we don't kill each other or kill all of society first.
Okay, well, let's just
wait, that's 20 weeks from now.
Yeah, and?
20 weeks, that's what, 5 months?
That's a lot of months.
And we're in, no, you're in college. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hope we don't do college from home.
That's true. Yeah, actually.
I guess we'll
so we may
see.
Not reach 100.
We'll see. I hope we reach 100. That would be kind of sad if we have to stop before then.
Hey, life goes on. Exactly.
So we watched, I think, a lot more than we talked about last week.
You watched.
Oh, yeah. I watched lot.
Basically. You're studying too, right? Between your studying, I assume.
Uh-huh. There's nothing to study.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I've just been doing a lot of Netflix partying because I don't know, there's nothing else really to do. But I watched the sequel to All the Boys I've Loved Before with my friends. To say, I was really upset with the ending. Really was not rooting for that ending to happen. So also, it was,
you might as well just be talking to a wall here because.
I'm talking to our audience, not
okay,
to you.
Fair enough.
I know that you're not going to care about anything I say about this movie.
I'll be right back.
Okay, bye. No, I think it was... The first movie was a lot better, definitely. But I don't know. It was fun to watch with my friends and talk to them about that. And we all agreed that the ending was just so bad. And you can fight me on that. So that was fun. And then the night after that, I watched Candyman with my other friend, which was really good. I didn't really know what to expect because I saw the trailer for the new one that's coming out. That's like Jordan Peele, right?
Yep, yep.
And so that's the extent of what I knew about it.
I think I only saw Candyman probably just once. And when it came, well, not in theater. I think I saw it on videotape. But
what is that
exactly? So I don't know that is that the 80s? Candyman, the
1992.
80s? So it was 92. So, huh? Well, still, maybe it was on. When did DVDs come out?
Who knows?
So maybe it was on a DVD.
I do know what they are.
Actually, no. I would have been graduating, so no, that was probably still VHS because DVD didn't come out till mid late 90s.
So that was fun, and I did remember reading a fact just like in some article before I had seen the movie that like there's this one scene where he like has bees in his mouth, and I read that he actually had real bees in his mouth and they like stung him in his like throat and stuff, and so, you know, gotta love movie making. So that's fun. Just a fun fact for y'all there. But it was really good and not at all what I was expecting. So I really liked that. Although I was planning to watch American Psycho, which had been on my list for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then they took it off like at the beginning of April or something. So it was a little bit too late for me to watch it.
It'll be on something.
Yeah. Well, I'll find it somewhere so I can watch it. But yeah. And then, with you, we watched Jaws again. I mean, obviously you just gotta. And it made me very happy.
The reason that was even on was because I upgraded our cinema with the Dolby Atmos speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy.
rearrange the whole basement?
I did. I rearranged. It's now definitely, not that it was bad before, but now all viewing is much
optimized.
It is optimized. It's more theater-like. And the way the seating is, it's a more of a joint watch than it was.
Yeah, like separated.
Yeah, and there's more space. Like the whole floor now is opened up.
Oh yeah, the floor is like clear.
So of course, I did all of that, but no one can come over. So it doesn't really matter. But I will say the Atmos speakers, I am very happy. I actually watched Guardians of the Galaxy again, and then I watched, there was another one.
Kong?
No. I watched scenes from Kong just to get...
That's a good test for a movie.
But then I watched King of Monsters, Godzilla, King of Monsters. And then I watched Thor, Ragnarok, same just bits and pieces just to kind of get the thing going. And then your brother with gaming. I set it up so he can... It's pretty sweet. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, your mom's not happy, but it's good.
So Jaws was fun. We watched the second Jumanji, which was deeply average, but Karen Gillan was in it, so I liked it.
Yeah, no, I think it was the whole having Danny DeVito and Danny Glover as characters, I just think was the chemistry wasn't there. I mean, I thought they were funny, and I thought The Rock and Kevin Hart playing them was fun for like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I think you're like, okay, let's move on. But I like the whole, I like it as a series, like, or as, you know, whatever the what's the word I'm looking for here?
Multiple movies.
Well, it's like, yeah, I was trying to think of it because it's not a multiverse, but.
Franchise?
Yeah, franchise. No, franchise is right, but it's and I know, I mean, they set it up for the next one.
Oh, yeah, they definitely did. And that's going to be fun.
I hope, yeah.
Yeah. And then we watched Friday the 13th Part 2.
Yeah.
Which was fun. You were just sleeping through it.
Yeah, well, I've seen it. I don't even know how many times. I just put it on because right now on Shudder, they're all there.
Yeah, and Halloween is there too, right?
The old one.
Yeah, the old one. Well, yeah.
But we own the old one.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
I figured... You can then watch. I mean, like I said,
you said the fourth one is good.
I really enjoyed the fourth one. The fourth one was my favorite.
Third one bad? Like, really bad?
The third one was at a time in the 80s when everything was 3D. So the third one is 3D.
Now that we can watch it. How are we supposed to watch it?
I mean, you can still watch. They just take off the effect.
Okay, but then what's bad about it?
Well, it was made for 3D, so when you start seeing like the machete coming at you and spears or whatever else, I think maybe an arrow, I don't even remember.
I probably would still jump.
But that was the gimmick. So that's that, you know, I don't even remember it. Let's put it that way. The fourth one is my favorite. I think I saw the fifth one, which was terrible. And I must have seen the sixth, and I think I stopped after that. And then the others that came on, maybe if it was on TV, I caught some of it, but I never watched the full, and I won't. So to me, it ended at the fourth.
The second one was interesting. It was kind of confusing because they were like, wouldn't he be grown by now? But he's dead. So like how?
Well, I don't think they thought at first that they were going to have this whole franchise either. And but what's interesting is, when I was awake, it isn't that bad in kind of how they, like, even the bar scene is actually a decent scene because they don't play to the least common denominator. I'm not saying the acting is this phenomenal acting, but again, it wasn't,
it was more diverse too.
Right. But it wasn't all stupid. Like they weren't all stupid people. Like they weren't just doing the dumb things that everyone does. So, but again, this was early on. This was the beginning of the whole, you know, slasher.
Yeah. I have to say, I liked, I'm not going to spoil, but I do like the tactic that that one chick was using with the...
Yeah.
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 No, I liked that. I thought that was smart.
She ended up doing a couple of decent movies afterwards, too. Her name, Amy Steele, she wasn't like a scream queen, but she, I mean, she did other sci-fi kind of horror movies and things like that. But yeah.
And I had already spoiled the beginning for myself when I was doing my project on Final Girls.
Yeah.
But that was fine. It had to happen. But yeah, I thought I was under the impression that every single movie except the fourth one was just horrible. Just because of the way you talk about
it. Well, again, I'm not saying the fourth one is this masterpiece either. It's just the best of the series to me.
Yeah, compared to others.
The story is a little bit better. But I mean, they get all, everybody gets dumber as the, every sequel that comes on is just, you know,
I mean,
idiotic.
At some point, it you have to be dumb to like be
putting
yourself in the situations.
I think the third one is where he gets the hockey mask, and that kind of sets the whole Jason supernatural image. Because in this one he seems like a grown
dude. Yeah,
deformed
bro
person, right? Yeah. And and then at some point he becomes supernatural. So
love the continuity there.
Yeah. Well, again, it's not, again, they're not doing it for just the story.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, and then we finally watched the finale to Doctor Who.
That's right. Yeah.
Which I think we like the story, but just not the writing.
I think it was it was like, no, you're spot on. But it was almost two different movies, or not that it was long, but it felt like two different episodes. The first half was kind of weird. I'm still getting angry at the whole, she still hasn't done anything.
Yeah.
Actually, now that I think about it, holy shit. I'm not going to spoil it, but she didn't.
That's very, yeah, wait a minute. She didn't do
that. She is like, and again, she's, oh, holy crap.
Oh my God. We need to write the show.
They just need to give her, she needs that moment. Like, and because she's a great doctor, but they just aren't using her full potential at all. So, but yeah.
And I think you're like, especially in this episode, you're right about the too many companions. Like,
oh God.
I feel like you don't need them all. There's only one companion that I really like, and it's Yaz. Yaz is my favorite.
Yeah, I forgot they were even there.
Yeah, I feel like they just, because there's so many, it's like they try to like divide it between, like divide the lines up between them, but I feel like it doesn't really work.
No, that one, yeah. No, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on from that sad point, I think that was the last thing that we had to discuss.
No, and we have one more.
We do?
Modern Moose.
Oh, yes.
So, Paul over at Modern Moose is all for giving away a zombie. So we're going to finalize those details. We'll talk to him. I know people have time, but again, everybody has. It's actually, in a way, it's hard to schedule time now when you have all these other things going on. But we'll work on that, and then we'll figure out a way on what you have to do to, I guess, win it. We'll do a giveaway of some sort. But we thank him. And again, if you haven't, please check out Modern Moose.
Definitely.
It's phenomenal. We should pull out our stuff. We should take some pictures and let's just put his link in the description.
In the episode notes.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so get ready. Zombies be coming.
Yes.
Or zombie.
Yeah, very true. All right.
All right, so you're doing...
Paranormal.
Paranormal, gotcha. I have a different kind of true crime, so.
Ooh.
All right, let's hear it.
Okay. So, I did not make up the story this week.
That was great.
So, today, I'm going to take you to Wisconsin to talk about a demonic possession so extensive that Time magazine wrote a profile on it. And it is considered to be one of the most, quote, abundantly documented cases of possession in the 20th century.
Okay.
So after you did your episode on possession, I really wanted to do one, but I wanted to, like, wait a while so that it wasn't, like, immediately after. So
is this a female?
Yes, but it's not the one that you're thinking.
Okay.
It's not Annalise Michel.
Okay.
But it might be the other one that you're thinking.
All right.
So today I'm going to tell you the story of Anna Eklund.
Yeah. Okay.
So my sources are Wikipedia, Mysterious Universe, which was like my main source, Dark Histories, and the Occult Museum. I was very surprised that those weren't blocked on my school computer. So, you know this one?
I know, yes, not like all the details. I believe they based a movie on this one too.
Probably, yeah. Yes. So.
Actually, when you tell me the year, then I'll know.
Of the exorcism? Yeah. We'll get there.
Okay.
So I heard this first on And That's Why We Drink, and I loved it so much. Like, I love the story. It was so creepy. So I've been wanting to do it for a while, and I completely forgot about it until your possession episode. So now we have it.
Okay.
So first off, Anna's name is actually Emma Schmidt, but we know her as Anna Eklund because it was like a pseudonym to like protect her identity and stuff. And so blah, blah, blah. So I'm just going to call her Anna because it's weird to call her Emma.
Okay.
Anna was born on March 23rd, 1882
okay.
to Catholic parents. So her parents were German immigrants, according to birth records. Fun. So seemingly Anna's life was pretty normal. She was pretty quiet. But others described her as charming and cheerful.
Okay.
And some have speculated that Anna's father might have abused her, but nothing has been confirmed.
All right.
And we'll understand a little bit why later.
All right.
So, the possession happens pretty quickly. Anna began showing signs of possession at around age 14.
All right.
So,
puberty.
Yeah. A lot of my notes are just seem like puberty.
Yep.
So, she would seem... The Vavitch.
Yes.
She would seem repulsed by holy objects. She demonstrated disturbed thoughts. I don't know what those thoughts were, but I mean, if other people thought of what I was thinking of at age 14, like, I'm pretty sure they would think that's disturbing. Like, for heaven's sake, when I was 9, I killed my father in a story. So clearly this should not have gone well for me back then.
Oh, my.
So she also was unable to enter churches. Before then, she'd regularly gone to church and, quote, actually seemed to enjoy it and be very involved with religion.
Right.
But now when she would go to churches or like near other holy objects, Anna would report feeling ill and uncomfortable. She said that she was struggling to get past the doors as if there was like a barrier stopping her from going inside. And this eventually progressed to her becoming horribly sick and panicked if they even managed to get her into the church. And she reported feeling, quote, overcome with unbearable dread.
Okay.
She would vomit up communion wafers and eventually would be thrown into a fit if a Bible, holy water, or other holy images were like presented to her.
Okay.
Sometimes she would go into a trance-like state and talk about wanting to, quote, vandalize church property or attack priests. And then later she wouldn't remember saying these things at all.
All right.
So really going in a great direction.
Mm-hmm.
And don't worry, it gets worse. So at home, she'd randomly yell out incredibly obscene things, often, quote, detailing depraved, unspeakable, violent, and sexual acts. And she started showing a quote, insatiable, unhealthy interest in sex.
And there, I mean, I know it's turn of the century, so of course.
It's
everything
like,
is suppressed.
And it's like a very Catholic family.
Right. So, but it's not even the family. I mean, they never thought about anything that could have happened at the church?
Not that I know of. I mean,
you know, for all you know, she was being abused there, and that's why she didn't want
to
go into the church and anything to do. So I'm wondering if, who knows? All right.
Maybe. I did not see anything about that. So she would suffer from random bursts of rage, where she'd shout at people and break things, and random bursts of sadness, where she'd shut herself in her room and keep everyone away from her, which is that whole bullet point, puberty. Sounds like it.
Sounds like a Friday here.
Okay, you know, I'm just going to move on from that and not address it. So, understandably, her parents started looking for medical and psychiatric help. However, no professionals could find anything physically wrong with her or a reason why she was suffering from these outbursts. However, it was like 1896, so I'm not very confident that they like knew everything about psychology at this point. So, yeah.
Oh, I don't even know if it's psychology. I think it's just anatomy and biology.
That's
at this point.
Yeah. 1896. So meanwhile, things are not getting better at home. Anna started blurting out phrases in Latin, a language that she had never studied. And the real indicator to know if she was like just reading this and reciting it or actually reciting it is how she pronounces her V's.
Gotcha.
First thing you learn in Latin class.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I had been there. I'm kidding.
You'd have been like, can you help me? I'm sorry.
Anyway, moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Anna's mother then proposed to her husband that their daughter might be possessed. Natural next step.
Of course.
And so the couple turned to the church for help.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know exactly when this was, if she was still like 14 or if this was later.
Right.
But by the time they actually secured an exorcism, it was 1912.
Ho!
And Anna was 30.
Ho!
Yeah. So from 14 to 30, she's like showing all of these like signs.
And she's still living at home?
I do not know. It's very unclear during that space and time.
Okay.
So I don't know. That's a very long time.
That's, yeah.
So Anna's parents had reached out to the church. And so the church referred the family to Father, I should have looked this up, Theophilus Reisinger.
Okay.
And he was a German priest known for his expertise on demons.
Mm.
So Father Reisinger came to examine the family and observed Anna's behavior. By this point, Anna was also speaking Polish and other Slavic languages, none of which she could possibly know.
Yeah, I'm still amazed. 30,
unless she was
16 years, I can't.
Yeah, crazy. So Father Reisinger, I don't know if it's Reisinger or Reisinger, so we'll go between them as I go. So he organized an exorcism, which was carried out on June 18th, 1912.
Okay.
And the exorcism worked. And Anna seemed fine. So they were like, cool, great. Over the next decade or so, the demonic force seemed to creep back into Anna's life. And she herself felt like that she was being controlled by unknown forces again.
Okay.
So now it's 1928. And Anna is 46.
Okay.
And so she reaches out to Father Reisinger for help. Again. So, unnerved by the apparent power of the demon possessing Anna, since it's come back now, Father Reisinger enlisted the help of another priest and dear friend, Father F. Joseph Steiger. And it said in the article that Steiger was, like, kind of hesitant to do this.
Oh, boy.
And he was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll help. So I feel bad for him.
Oh, my God.
So by this point, Anna's father, Jacob, had passed away.
Okay.
So, moving on. And it was theorized sort of around this time that Anna's aunt Mina, who also was dead by this point, had been the one to open her up to possession and had cursed her because her aunt Mina was rumored to be a witch.
But they didn't give a reason of why?
Well, there is a reason of why.
All right, here we go.
We'll get there, though. All
right.
So, allegedly, Mina would cast spells on herbs, then she'd use those herbs to prepare Anna's food. And that would, like, just sort of open her up for demons to come and, like, just chill.
Okay.
So, why, you ask?
Yeah, why? I'm still trying to figure that part out.
Well,
like, was it broccoli? What was it? Brussels sprouts? Like, what was the...
The herbs?
Well, on what kind of food?
Well, I don't know. Maybe she was, like, garnishing stuff with, like, cursed parsley or whatever. But why
wasn't
would
cilantro,
she?
Wasn't cilantro. Cilantro can't be.
Okay. Well,
maybe thyme, rosemary, sage.
Why would she do this, you ask?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Why?
Well, it is rumored that Mina was Jacob and his father's mistress. And she...
Wait, and Mina is whose?
I don't know. I'm assuming his wife's sister.
Okay.
But the next part of this also makes me kind of question it.
So then maybe she was abused.
Yes, because Jacob was, quote, angry that he could not sate his incestuous desires for his daughter.
Okay. All right. So oh, my God.
That's just great. So she cursed Anna because Jacob was mad that he couldn't, like, abuse her sexually.
All right.
So that was, that's possibly the reason.
This but is another wonderful family.
I know, right? So none of this has been confirmed at all.
Okay.
So we don't know if that any of that is true. Just right. saying. So Anna, we're back in 1928. Anna's possessed, and so she's taken to a convent in Erling, Iowa, from Wisconsin, where the exorcism was to take place. The convent was chosen because it was pretty secluded, and the priests also thought that getting Anna into an unfamiliar place might, quote, disorient any demons within her.
Understood.
So, the priests actually struggled to get her into the convent, as Anna was, like, struggling and snarling and as soon as she, like, saw it.
Okay.
And so it took both priests plus several very buff nuns, which... The article kept saying, like, the strongest nuns. And I just kept imagining these, like, ripped nuns, like, grabbing onto her and, like, trying to pull her inside. So, anyway, these buff nuns.
Right.
They're trying to get her into the convent. So they, like, drag her in, kicking and screaming, and, like, tie her to one of the beds.
Okay.
And Anna would just growl and snap at anyone who came near her.
Okay.
As one does when they're possessed. So on August 17th, 1928, the exorcism officially began.
Okay, second one.
The second one, yes. Mm-hmm. So first, the two priests tested Anna to see what kind of possession, if there was one, that they were dealing with.
Right.
First, they switched out the holy water for just tap water and tried to, like, you know, cast it on her. And she showed no reaction.
Okay.
Then when they went back to holy water, she violently reacted.
All right.
And they didn't tell her, obviously, when they were switching, and she seemed to just know.
Okay.
They did the same thing with blessed food and other blessed objects, and the same result every time. She just seemed to know which was blessed and, like, would be repulsed by it.
Okay. That's kind of odd.
Yes, definitely. Whenever someone read a Latin prayer next to her, Anna would thrash around violently and throw tantrums.
It's like a Thursday here.
All of this convinced the priests that the possession was definitely real and dangerous.
Okay.
So apparently either they didn't tie her immediately to the bed or they untied her at some point. It's not exactly clear. But somehow she was able to, like, curl up in the corner of the room. And she would purr or hiss like a cat at certain points.
Okay.
And then sometimes she would just climb up the walls like a spider.
Hmm.
You know, as you do. So then, I don't know, it's kind of unclear, like, what happened in what order, like, in the beginning. Because she would, like, at the beginning, she passed out and started levitating off the bed.
Right.
And I don't know if she was still tied at this point or if she was just levitating.
Okay.
But it took several people, I'm assuming some buff nuns, to pull her back down onto the bed. And then even though she was seemingly comatose at this time, the priests, and I'm sure these buff nuns, heard growls, screams, voices, and wails, quote, bellow out from her even in the absence of any movement from her mouth.
Huh.
So all of this sounds like a delightful August 17th. So her voice would change in pitch often, like, to just, you know, when it gets too deep for, like, her vocal cords are, like, too high. And just, you know, it just doesn't make sense that those sounds are being emitted from her.
Right.
And sometimes they could clearly hear two voices speaking at once from inside of her.
Okay, so now it's becoming more and more legit here.
Yeah. She'd make many animalistic sounds. Including what priests described as, quote, a pack of wild beasts suddenly let loose. So that sounds really fun. Anna would also vomit, quote, rancid liquid and tobacco leaves. And by the way, this whole time she wasn't eating anything.
Okay.
She wasn't like able to keep any food down. And so she was still vomiting like a lot.
Hmm.
And I don't know what the significance of the tobacco leaves are either. So she would spit constantly and urinate copious amounts, allegedly 10 to 20 times a day.
Okay.
And I don't think she was eating like or drinking.
Right.
So not great.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah. She clawed or bit at anyone who came near her, and seemed to possess strength that was abnormal for her size.
Okay.
Also, her eyes would bulge inhumanly. Her head and lips would swell to, quote, incredible proportions. Her abdomen seemed to distend, quote, to the point where it seemed it would explode.
Okay. All right.
Only to revert to its normal size again and start the whole horrific cycle anew.
All right.
Also, her head physically elongated at some points, which I don't really know what that means.
I think it means her neck must have extended up like a...
Oh, that's... I don't like that at all.
Or maybe her head. Maybe her...
Like
her face and forehead. Like
that
stretched.
Woman in It, like in the painting?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Father Steiger recorded notes on the exorcism, writing at one point, quote, as the days pass, Anna's body swells and deforms more and more. At one point, it is so disfigured that her body has become a bloated, shapeless mass.
Ugh.
And nuns turn away from her bed, fearing she may explode.
Oh my God.
Apparently, the exorcism was so loud and chaotic that people just started coming to the convent in curiosity. So I guess it wasn't as secluded as they thought it was. But people were like, what's going on here? And so as the exorcism continued, it became apparent that Anna was possessed by four entities. So the first claimed to be Beelzebub,
mm-hmm.
Lord of the Flies, one of the seven princes of hell.
Right.
He would constantly try to engage priests in philosophical debates and mind games.
Okay.
And, you know, the first part doesn't sound too bad. You know, I'd love to, go stargaze with Beelzebub.
Yeah, no.
Talk philosophy, you know?
No.
That'd be a nice date.
All right, you're just disgusting.
Anyway, the second was Judas Iscariot, the lame guy who betrayed Jesus. You know,
okay.
Loser. So he said that he'd been trying to convince Anna to kill herself so that she'd go to hell.
Okay.
As you do. The last two spirits were Anna's father, Jacob, and her aunt, Mina, both of whom were dead by this point, like I said. And seemingly, they were possessing her with, quote, vengeance on their minds.
All right.
So that's why they had that theory about them being the ones to, possess her, kind of.
Yep.
So the spirits predicted that Father Steiger would get in a car accident as he drove to visit his sick mother. And I don't know if that actually happened, but if they put it in the article, then maybe it did. They would also reveal the dirty secrets of those present who, nobody could know.
Right.
So that must have been pretty embarrassing. And priests would observe clouds of mosquitoes and flies appearing suddenly out of nowhere and then disappearing just as fast. Sickening stenches would fill the room, making those present stagger backwards and just sort of clouding their senses. Father Reisinger claimed to have a vision of the room on fire and, quote, Lucifer and Beelzebub standing in the corner berating him. So that sounds fun. At times, Anna's body would seem to turn to stone, and it would become so heavy that the bed would bend underneath her, and it seemed like it was about to break.
Oh my God.
And all of this became so overwhelming that the priests and nuns started working in shifts because no one could stand to be in the room for that long. So they worked day and night for 23 days.
Jeez.
Until the demons finally seemed to weaken. And then one day, Anna bolted up in bed and shouted, quote, Beelzebub, Judas, Jacob, Mina, hell, 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 my Jesus, mercy, praise be Jesus Christ. And that seemed to completely get rid of the demons, and Anna returned to normal.
Huh.
So, I'm assuming during this time they were also, chanting at her and stuff and,
yeah.
Driving the demons back. So after the exorcism, the majority of the nuns who were present during the ordeal requested to be transferred. which makes sense. Yeah. You know, I probably would too. And then in the 1990s, the convent was demolished.
Okay.
The rest of Anna's life was relatively normal, considering, though she was absolutely traumatized by her ordeal. 46 years. That's a long time to be, like, going through possession after possession. So as I said in the beginning, Time Magazine wrote a profile on Father Reisinger in 1936.
Okay.
And Father Steiner, meanwhile, attempted to just live a quiet life away from the spotlight after this. So immediately after the exorcism, Father Karl Vogel, just another priest, tried to track down as many of the people involved to interview them.
Right.
And published an account of the exorcism in a little booklet, it's like 48 pages, called Begone, Satan, a soul-stirring account of a diabolical possession in Iowa. And that was published in 1935.
Huh.
So some people criticize the book, saying that it embellishes details.
Right.
And also that book is like the major source of information for like all of this.
Yeah.
Because it has like a complete, like it's got interviews and everything, you know. But Father Steiger's housekeeper has defended the book, saying that she witnessed a lot of the exorcism and the book was telling the absolute truth. So according to her, quote, I was a witness to almost the whole period of the exorcism of the Erling possession case. And Erling was one of, like, the town.
Yeah. Why was she?
I don't know why she was there. Maybe she like was like chilling with him because he kept getting covered in vomit. And she, I don't know.
Who knows?
And I can truthfully say that the facts mentioned in Begone Satan are correct. Some of the scenes were even more frightful than described in the booklet. There is not the slightest doubt in my mind that the devils were present, and I will never forget the horrible scenes, vile, filthy, and dirty, as long as I live.
Hmm.
So, that is the story of Anna Eklund.
It's not what I thought. I didn't know that story. It does remind me, though, of the movie Exorcist, just some of the things. So
yeah.
I'm wondering if that's what Blatty used some of that, because I know it was based on a boy in Maryland, but
yes, I almost did that one. It was like Roland Doe or something.
Yeah, but a lot of what you were saying was very similar.
Definitely.
To that. But yeah, no, that's
a crazy one.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, there you go. I thought you said this was a fun one, like when you were saying,
well, fun as in I enjoy it.
Oh my God. All right. Great. That's awesome. All right. Well done.
Thanks.
All right, doing true crime.
A different kind of true crime, you said?
Yeah. We apologize if there was feedback. We were listening. We thought we heard something.
Yeah, I don't know what it was.
And Emma believes it's Beelzebub because he's calling for a date so she can talk philosophy or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I just right. Hit me up on my phone. We'll talk.
That's right.
We'll
talk. Great. Too bad we're in quarantine. We can't just send you off. Arranged marriage.
You can come here.
Arranged. All right. Maybe we'll get a goat for you.
I am worth more than one goat.
I'll see what the Lord of the Flies says.
Actually, I took a quiz online and it said I was worth 10 goats. So, you know, you better get buying.
Anyway.
I looked it up.
My story, I'm not going to say anything about it because it'll give it away. But true crime, different, not a serial killer. Okay.
Is it still murder? A murder?
There's death.
There's death, there's but death. Not murder?
No, it's murder. But it's, I guess it is a mass murderer then.
What?
But it's a different category for this type. You'll understand when I say the category.
Okay.
But there is definitely.
I have an idea, but I guess we'll see.
Okay. It takes place 70s and 80s.
Okay, roughly. So far it fits.
All right. What do you think it is?
I don't want to say yet. I let me write it down, and then I get it right, I will say that.
All right, I'll let you write it down, because when I start my story, it'll just go right there and there. Are you done there? Okay,
yeah,
ready?
Okay.
Here we go. You just flip over the thing, so.
Okay, flipped over.
All right. So this story has been compared to an old and famous legend. Okay?
Okay, that doesn't fit with my...
All right, good. There we go. The legend goes like this. Okay, you find yourself on a path, and it's dark. The darkness has nothing to do with the time of day. It's because you're under a forest canopy.
Okay.
So you really can't tell time. I mean, you could when you left, but...
So like quarantine. You just can't tell what time it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, pretty much. You might know the day of the week, though. You're traveling by coach, okay? And you are hyper aware of your surroundings. you want to travel as fast as you can, but it's dark, so you really have to kind of be careful.
Right.
The only way to get from town to town is through these forests.
Dark and foreboding woods.
Yeah, exactly. And as you're going, you notice something in the distance. A fallen tree has blocked your path. You pull the reins of the horse, and you come to an abrupt stop. Now, to travel by coach means that you have some wealth.
Money, yeah.
Right, exactly. And you may be carrying precious cargo. Now, the forest is silent, but you can hear your heart beating over the sound of the horse's neighing. Okay? You dismount to go move the tree. But what you don't notice when you hit the ground is that you are surrounded. By whom, you ask?
Robin Hood.
And his band of merry men. So
this is definitely not at all what I'm
discussing. They will take your precious cargo and disperse it to the poor, right?
Good.
So, like you said, famous tale of Robin Hood. However, in other areas of the world, truth is stranger than fiction.
I'm so excited. Yeah, this is definitely 100% not.
So my story is about bandits.
I love bandits.
Okay.
I love bandit stories.
What did you write down?
I thought you were going to talk about the Tylenol thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, different kind of true crime. And, like, a lot of people died. Yeah, and I think it was the 70s, 80s.
Too soon. Can't talk about Tylenol.
Too soon.
We're actually not allowed to talk about Tylenol ever in this house and the murders.
Sorry, Mom.
So, bandits have been around for ages, and some are still active today. Okay?
Okay, good.
And for this story, we're going to focus on the valley and the ravines of central India.
Ooh.
So locally, they're called dacoits, which means bandit.
Makes sense.
Or bajis, which means...
bandit.
Rebels.
Oh.
Okay. Now, unfortunately, in India, the caste system is, you know, prevalent in social and economic conditions, but it's also prevalent in the bandit community. So, I mean...
Jeez.
I don't know. Like, that's like double whammy. I don't even know.
I'm not as fond of bandits anymore.
But there's a saying in the region that goes like this. If a man is blessed enough to have three sons, one will join the uniformed service, the armed forces, or the police. One will stay at home and till the land. And the third will become a dacoit. The first will thus give the family legal authority. The second, the assurance that the land will not go to waste. And the third will guarantee the social prestige of the family.
So in your family, who's who?
Exactly. We don't, yeah, well. So, but in reality, and this was one of the police superintendents wrote this, for the majority of the dacoits, land is the key. They fight for it, they kill for it, they die for it in the ravines. Also, some join for reasons of revenge. If the system gives you no justice, then you take justice in your own hands. And it goes on to say, I'm sorry to say, many become dacoits because of the high-handedness of the police. Police beatings, police inefficiency, fear of the police.
No.
All right, so that's kind of it. So there's this pedestal of what it is to be, and then there's the reality.
Right.
However, on a bitterly cold day in February of 1983... one of the most famous bandits in India's history was about to surrender.
No!
The bandit led 12 men through the ravines of the Chambal River Valley. The bandit was armed, carrying a rifle, basically, and a curved dagger. Going through these ravines, they were saying it was crazy. I think it was like 6 miles of getting out of this place. The bandit was in hiding, of course. A police superintendent for that local district accompanied the group, mm-hmm. and was unarmed while going with them, and was unarmed because the leader
mm-hmm.
basically said, we're not coming in if you're so.
Okay.
And fair. And there was trust apparently, but the policeman was dressed fully in his uniform.
Okay.
The superintendent had negotiated this surrender for almost a period of a year. Okay. Now, other than the chief, or the police chief, only the chief minister, which is the state's highest elected official, knew what was coming, okay? So that evening, when they came out of the ravines,
oh boy,
they were met by 300 policemen. And they had just, like I said, had traveled 6 miles going through these rivers and valleys.
Wow.
The bandit was wanted for $10,400 US dollars.
Okay? Whoa.
That's about $30,000 US today.
That's a lot of money.
But in rupees, mm-hmm. that's 2.3 million in rupees in today. Okay.
Wow.
Now, why was there a bounty on this bandit's head? Well, it was because of the massacre of 22 men. Some, I think it may have been 2 years earlier.
Wow.
Okay. Anyway, I forgot. The bandit was a woman. And guess what? She wasn't even 26 yet.
My new role model.
This is the story of Poolin Devi, a.k.a. the beautiful bandit, the goddess of flowers, or the bandit queen.
Oh, my God.
So my sources are Wikipedia, Britannica. There were some others. But the main source, The Atlantic, this woman, I just want to give her full credit because basically I took the whole story from her article, which was, it was almost a mini, I shouldn't say book. It was this great essay, Mary Ann Weaver. And I just looked her up some more just to see who she's accolades, all these things, has written about Asia, Egypt, all these other things. So she, Pakistan, all these other things. So I think she's very aware of the area and things like that. So I just pretty much am going to take what she wrote, paraphrase that kind of thing, because
all right.
I could have read this whole thing. And if I had read this whole thing, it would have been like a 2-hour episode. It was, I'm just at the no depth. We're like high level, but it's insane. So to the crime timeline.
Crime timeline.
So Poolin Devi was born on August 1st, 1963. Actually, I talked to Dadi about this and I was trying to explain and I couldn't tell, like, she knew, but I couldn't tell if she was, oh yes, cool, or she was like, oh. So just a heads up on that. But anyway, her family was poor and belonged to one of the lowest castes, like the fishermen, the farmers. Her father believed that he had been blessed with bad luck because he had four daughters in succession.
Okay. You know.
And he then finally had a son. Okay.
Okay.
Poolin was the second oldest, but she loved her brother. I mean, almost protected him more than the mother did, would do anything for him, basically kept him by her side kind of thing. Now, she was interviewed, of course, throughout and after all this had happened, but basically said her father was a simpleton, an idiot, and that he just had many problems with business and had no business acumen, I should say, and that he almost lost all of his inheritance. So he had a lot of land, and his older brother ended up, and I should say it was his older brother and his older brother's son, all right? So her cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Swindled him out of almost all of his land.
Wow.
All right. And she's watching this kind of happening and she's still 9. So it was believed that, and I don't understand how this works, but the older brother had better connections to the government and the police than her father, but they're still the same caste. And they, I don't know how it is, but maybe he had just had a better job. Like maybe he was the oldest. He ended up working for the police or something, but their circle of friends were upper caste families. Now, Poolin was known to be a spitfire, would not hold back, did not abide by the traditional role of women in the society. And I guess the caste system in general, 9 years old.
Right? I love right? this.
You're not the boss of me.
I love this girl so much.
God. So anyway, now she would speak her mind to her father about, I don't know if she'd call him a simpleton or whatever, but would also then tell him that, you know, what's happening is not fair and wrong and you need to do something about it. To the point where she ended up going to the village square with her older sister and confronted her cousin and berated him in front of his friends, which were upper caste members,
yes.
about his greed. And yes. then I think maybe slipped in some personal things.
Yes.
And all these other things. So the other businessmen, the other friends, the other people were just like, this cannot be allowed. What are you doing? This
no.
is, you know, what's going on. So that day she made an enemy, which would then set the rest of her future. So she would have more run-ins with him. And at one point it got so bad. I don't even know what she was doing. He ended up beating her and his sister. I think actually she did like a sit-in on land that they had taken. And then he came in and beat her with a brick till she was unconscious.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He dies, right?
You need to listen.
He better.
So that didn't stop her.
Oh my God.
Stopped her older sister though. So somehow he convinced Poulin's father to marry her off at the age of 11 to a man three times.
Oh my God, I'm going to barf.
The man was a known abuser.
Oh my God.
And I believed he was a widower. So of course, she's not even of age, but he sexually and mentally abuses her for almost a year. So she ends up, I don't want to say she put up with it, but it took her a year to escape. So right after her 12th birthday, she escapes.
Okay.
Returns home, and her mother scolds her.
What?
Because she's now brought dishonor to the family.
No.
Because marriage is a marriage. It's a union with God. And told her, you need to commit suicide. Go jump in the well. Now, she contemplated that, but of course she didn't do that.
Oh my God.
And it just got to a point where that she's like, okay, now I'm on my own. She still was at home, but she buckled down and her whole thing was, I'm getting my father's land back.
Okay.
So over that now next 10 years, she's battling her cousin. Rumors are flying around about her. He's feeding rumors that she is, you know, promiscuous.
Oh my God.
All these things. She bathes in the sacred river naked, walks around, all these things.
She's 12? And
this is over the next 10 years. So she's she's definitely of age now. She actually at one point married another cousin, but then he was actually married to someone else. So that didn't last. So she doesn't have the best luck. But she still fought, debate, whatever you want to, and somehow got him into court, a courthouse.
Yes.
And she represented her father's his interest. I'm not saying she was a lawyer or whatever, but she was the witness and everything like that. But it was believed that her cousin had bought, judge, jury, whatever. And it didn't, she didn't win. Or he didn't win, I should say. The father didn't get anything. So a year later, this is now 1979, so she's, I think, 16 or 17, maybe? 16, I think. She gets arrested for breaking into the cousin's home and robbing it.
Damn.
Which she completely is like, I'm not involved. This is like a frame job. So she ends up spending a month in police custody. No trial.
What?
Is in custody. And is raped repeatedly by the officers.
Oh my God.
All right. So, and of course, the officers were friends of her cousin.
Yeah, he probably bought everyone off.
So she finally gets released, after a month. And when this is all going down, a famous bandit has camped out by the river near their town.
Mm-hmm.
And he was... more, I should say more infamous, like just deadly.
Right.
His name was Babu Gujar. And it is believed now there is two stories. One story is that they had actually sent a letter to this family to say that we're coming for your daughter. We're going to either cut her nose off or we're going to kidnap her because of this promiscuous. She's bringing, dishonor to this region.
Oh,
blah,
my God.
Blah, 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 blah. Others believe that the cousin paid him to kidnap her.
Oh my God.
So whatever the case, she gets awakened one night to a group of men who then just take her away.
Oh my God.
And they go deep into the valleys and the ravines with her. And basically over 3 days, she is under the control of Babu. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what ends up happening is, again, I don't know if it's rape, things like that, all sorts of things, but By the third day, the second in command, his name is Vikram Mala, he kills Babu.
Oh.
Because he was sweet on Pulin for years. Like, I think they had, I mean, they knew of her for like over the 2 years, but he had always had a thing for her. And he was a lower caste, which was pretty crazy for the time, because killing this leader set shockwaves to not just the bandits,
right,
the police though too, and all of India, because he killed
someone
a higher caste
than, yeah,
and then took over the group. So all of a sudden this is happening, and what he does is he takes Pulin as his mistress, and this just changes her world, in the sense that she is now becoming this legend of a bandit queen, because she is not just a mistress. She's his right hand. They conspire
like
together.
And yeah. Wow.
She teaches him how to shoot a gun.
Wow.
All these, I mean, he teaches her to shoot like little things, I should say. But he also confides in her because she's very spiritual. She believes she was a follower of the goddess Durga, which is of power.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
She, you know, that kind of thing. So everything that she did and what she believed in was Durga's doing. And she believed in omens as well, which he followed to a point. So they ended up controlling over 8,000 square miles. They robbed, they looted, they held up trains, they ransacked upper caste villages and homes. They murdered, they kidnapped, again, upper caste only. And on each operation, Pulin insisted that they, after they were done, that they would go to the temples and pray to Durga and then give to the poor. Now, Pulin was always bright, always smart. They actually, all the people I interviewed said that she had always, you know, you could just tell she was on top of things, and her instincts were always good. Her gut was right. And she would interpret, like I said, these omens and signs, and Vikram started to believe in them as well. However, in August of 1980, she had seen this sign. There was like a monsoon, and there was a cow that was stranded that she just believed, like, this is bad, we got to go. And she was telling Vikram, we got to break camp, we got to get out of here. And he didn't. And that night, a group of men raided their hut.
Oh.
And then two brothers, Sri Ram and Lala Ram, who were members of this group when Babu was was the leader, shot Vikram dead. In the bed. Like, she was right there when it happened. And then they believe they may have chloroformed her. So his murder, though, was because was revenge because of him killing an upper caste person. So that's why they killed him. So then they tied her wrists and ankles and everything, threw in a boat, and then went to this town, their town, called, I can't know if I wrote that, I think it's called Bamai. So they brought her there, and then they kept her in a shed for like 3 weeks.
Jeez.
And every night, a line of men would go in and rape her.
No.
Until she was unconscious. So after 23 days, they finally took her out and put her in the village square and made her, the brothers said, go get me some water. And then she wouldn't do it. So they kicked her and then stripped her naked.
Oh my God.
And then
God.
As she walked there, they were spitting on her, all these other things. And then she collapsed because she hadn't eaten or any of those other things. That evening, a priest, a friend, pundit, rescues her.
Okay.
And takes her out and gets her back to the ravines and into a different area. And he basically, you know, starts to help nurse her back to health. But during this time, she creates her own group of bandits.
Yes.
And I think she got a couple of the old group that were there that were loyal to Vikram. Now, she really didn't get over Vikram's death, but she continued the banditry that they had done and and throughout the region. On February 14th, 1981, so it was almost, I think it was, they said 17 months since Vikram's death and all this going, everything that happened. Actually, it could have been 17, so maybe it's a little less than a year, or a little more than a year.
Okay.
She ends up paying a visit to Bamai.
Yes.
Now I'm just gonna. This is stolen right from this Atlantic article because it's brilliantly written. The town was home to about 50 families, nearly all of whom belonged to the landowning and warrior Thakur caste, the second highest in the Brahmin order.
Okay.
So for all intents and purposes, they control everything.
Right.
So no major road connects Bamai to any other town. You have to go by boat mostly, right?
Okay.
Or you have to come through the ravine. So when you cross it through the river, they can see you coming, right? So no one in Bamai had paid any special attention to this group of about 20 people dressed in police uniforms as they crossed the Yamuna River that afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
The party was led by a young girl. The villagers thought that was unusual. Dressed in a khaki coat with three silver stars of a deputy superintendent of police,
mm-hmm.
blue jeans, and boots with zippers.
Okay.
She wore bright lipstick, her nails were painted red, and her hair was cut in an unusual bob. She had a gun hung over her shoulder and bands of ammunition swept across her chest. In her hand, she carried a battery-powered megaphone. And as the villagers began to assemble to watch what was going on, she led her men to the village shrine. And there was a trident of to Shiva,
mm-hmm.
Or a trident emblem to Shiva, god of destruction. The group of outsiders sat down and prayed to Shiva. Then, as the men dispersed, you know, some just kind of going into the village, you know, mm-hmm. this group, the girl jumped up onto a parapet of the village well.
Yes.
Switches on the megaphone, and according, this is the testimony by police, she began to shout, "Listen, you guys, if you love your lives, hand over all the cash, silver, and gold you have. And listen again. I know that Lala Ram Singh and Shri Ram Singh, rival dacoits, are hiding in this village. If you don't hand them over to me, I will stick my gun into your butts and tear them apart."
Oh my
this
god.
This is Pulan Devi speaking. Jai Durga Mata. Victory to Durga, the mother goddess.
I love this woman so much.
So the men searched and looted their homes, okay? And Pulan remained at the well, just pacing back and forth. And they said, like, her eyes were studying the village as if she just knew this village well. After the search of almost an hour, her men come back and they have not found the Ram brothers. And the villagers denied ever even seeing them two men. So she says, "You're lying. I will teach you to tell the truth." She orders that all the young men in the village be rounded up. They took about 30 of them. Drag them to the well. She spat on them and warned them again, "Unless you tell me where these bastards are, I will roast you alive." The men plead with her, swore that they had never seen the brothers. Her captive stood in line before the well, and she walked slowly, deliberately down it, tearing off their turbans in a rage and hitting many of them in the genitals with her rifle butt. Then they marched them all single file to the river. At the embankment, they were ordered to kneel, their faces turned to the earth. Bursts of gunfire followed, and the body of 30 men crumpled and fell. 22 died. It was the largest dacoit massacre since the founding of modern India.
Holy moly.
And it was triply shocking because of its scale, because it was led by a woman, and because a woman of a lower caste murdered men of a vastly higher one. So that's straight from...
That is sad.
From the Atlantic.
Yeah.
Okay. So this sent shockwaves across India. Pulan was now one of the most wanted bandits in the country. And she realized now that her life was just not safe, that everybody would be coming out to get her.
Right.
So she decided to escape into the deepest parts of the ravines and the valley. And for the next 2 years, she just stayed out of sight. Right. Now, her bandits still plundered, but she never participated in any of them. However, the hiding, the fear, the stress started to take a toll on her health, and she was really deteriorating.
No.
So I don't know how it happened, but at one point she's approached by this local superintendent to say, like, "Look, you're going to die out here. Let's negotiate something. You know, let's just come to terms."
Okay.
So, you know, it took a year to mm-hmm. negotiate this. And, but she was like, okay. And she was smart. Right. And it was also, she was illiterate. because she never had any schooling. But she said, I have terms, and if we, these are my terms, and if you agree, let's talk. So this is what she agreed to. They would never be ever hanged for their crimes. So it was her and I think either it was 12, including her, or her and 12. They would not be paraded to the masses in handcuffs or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
At their surrender, she wanted the statues of Durga and Gandhi present. They would serve a sentence of only 8 years and all be released together. They would be housed in the same prison together. Hmm. It would be an A-level prison, like a low security, kind of like a white collar type prison. They would never have to set foot in Bamai, be tried in Bamai or in the, I think it was Uttar Pradesh, that whole province area. They would never, ever have to serve anything there.
Mm-hmm.
And that her father's land would be returned. Her father would be compensated for all those lost years. And her brother would be given a government position. So they agreed to those terms.
Okay.
And then they decided to exit the Ravine Valley. So they took that. I can't remember how many days it took. But as she returned the next day, in this courtyard by this police station, 70 journalists were there.
Wow.
Because no one had seen her. No one's ever seen the Bandit Queen. It's just this talk of this person, right? Right,
yeah.
The courtyard was full of people. Bollywood music is blaring on speakers.
Oh, my God.
And then, so this is, I think I started this, 1983.
Mm-hmm.
Then a 5-foot woman, 5 feet tall, wearing a red bandana in khaki top, comes out. She has a gun slung around her shoulder.
Oh, my God.
And she comes out, kneels to Durga, kneels to Gandhi, prays. Then she turns around to the crowd, 8,000 people.
Oh, my God.
She raises a rifle above her head and then finally comes down to do a namaste to everyone. And the crowd roars as if she's a rock star.
That is, oh, my God.
So, peaceful, everything's fine. They abide to her conditions. She goes to jail. Now, most of it's upheld, and she had a deal then with also her 12 bandits, where they were going to do this together, they would all leave together, and of course, that starts to fracture immediately.
Right.
They start deciding that they want to be tried, they go to the other province that they want to, and they all get off, because there's no witnesses, no one's going to go against them, so some serve less than a year, some, you know, maybe a couple of years, but they all are released. She is still in jail. After 8 years, like the 8-year mark passes, she refuses though to leave. She doesn't want to be tried. People had asked her, why don't you just go to trial? She's like, they'll kill me. Like this is a man's world. There's no way I'm going to do anything.
Right.
But by that 8-year mark, other people start getting involved. Human rights activists got involved. Women's rights activists got involved. Government officials were getting involved. And somehow after 11 years of being in jail, she gets pardoned and released.
Wow.
All right. She leaves to rock star status again. She then decides, I'm running for office. Her platform to represent the poor, the lower caste, women's rights, and she wins in a landslide.
Oh my God.
However, she loses her next election,
aww,
but then wins the next two.
Oh my God. Okay.
On July 26, 2001, she's assassinated. By 3 masked gunmen
outside
her home. She is hit 9 times. Her security guard is also wounded. He survives. By the time they get to the hospital, she's declared dead.
No!
So she had made many enemies, of course, throughout her life. And, you know, police are kind of trying to figure it out. No. But there was a known prime suspect. It would take over a decade actually to get justice, but the murderer, one of them, his name was Sher Singh Rana, and he would finally surrender to police in 2004. All right, so 3 years later, he would then escape jail.
Oh my God.
And then get captured again in 2006.
Okay.
It is in August of 2014 that he finally gets sentenced to life in prison. 10-year trial.
Oh my God.
His motive? It was to take revenge upon her for her actions as a leader of a bandit gang that acted primarily against the higher castes in the late 70s and early 80s.
Oh my God.
And being considered a hero for rising against the atrocities of the upper caste. And that's the story of the Bandit Queen.
Oh my God. Wow. I do not condone murder.
Oh, jeez.
But she is a role model.
Like I said, there. If you went into, like, this woman had this incredible interview with her, and she would just say, she asked about certain things, and Pullen just, like, snapped at her, going, there is no justice here. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, women get raped every day. Like, this is what happens. And she just went on and on and on about, this is just, you're just tipping the iceberg here. But yeah, it's an incredible story. And I think you'll like the song after I tell you what. Well, you'll see it afterwards.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll just put it on the list. That way we go. Okay. But there you go. All right. Ready for a fun fact?
Yeah.
All right. Here we go.
All right. So our first fun fact was sent in by listener Allison.
Cool.
So thank you, Allison. And it is that the first cow to fly in an airplane was Elm Farm Ollie in February of 1930. Ollie was also the first cow to be milked on an airplane.
Okay. So was there a reason?
Maybe to get the record.
Okay. All right.
So, I mean, yeah. And then the second one is for me.
All right.
Because it's kind of gross.
Oh, jeez.
But did you know? So you were talking about the Atlantic, and that reminded me of this article that I came across.
Uh-huh.
And in prisons in the U.S., instead of, like, you know, getting tattoos in prison, the new thing is to get implants in one's penis that are 3D like objects.
Okay.
So, like,
no one needed to know this.
But I feel like the information should be shared because I was just, like, jaw dropped while reading this. But, like, they carve.
All right. Like, no.
They carve things into, like, shapes. Like they would take dice and they would carve it into a shape. And then they just, like...
Why are we even... This is not...
And then it just... like a 3D.
Fun fact. Gets, like, I apologize to everyone who is listening. And they've probably stopped. People just turned
it's
off right
so
now.
Gross.
They just turned off.
It's so gross.
That's not a fun fact.
Yes,
it's like
it is.
False advertising.
It is so fun.
You've just... Oh my God.
Anyway,
my God.
The article is called The Problem with DIY Penis Implants. It's on the Atlantic. Please read it. It's just so mind blowing to me. And so disgusting.
There's a line. I think we've crossed it.
I feel like it needed to be shared.
It did not need to be shared.
Yes, it did.
Oh my God. All right.
So,
oh my
that's
God.
My other fun fact.
Next time, oh my God, no. I think I need to have editorial rights on your fun facts before from now on. Please, people, send in your own, because otherwise, oh my God.
Anyway, so if you would like to send in your own fun facts, you can do that at our Gmail, which is everythinginpodcast@gmail.com. You can also submit them to our website, which is everythingpodcast.weebly.com. If you have story suggestions or stories of your own, you can submit those there too. They might be featured on the podcast, so that would be really fun. We are on social media. Our Instagram is @everythinginpodcast. Our Twitter is @between_podcast. And we have a Facebook group and page, both by the name of Everything In Between Podcast. So check those out. We post when new episodes come out, all that fun stuff. And if you want in on that giveaway that we'll be setting up
sometime
soon.
Yeah, we'll get
soon.
All that stuff together. We'll talk to Paul at Modern Moose and... we'll get a picture of what it, I mean, we should get a picture of what it's going to look like, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, so definitely go there to get some news about that. And if you're on a platform that allows you to do so, please, please, please rate, review, and subscribe. It's very helpful and gives us a nice ego boost during these boring times. So do that. And lastly, we pick songs for all of our episode titles, and we've compiled those songs into a playlist on Spotify called The Soundtrack In Between. So give it a listen. It's a good mix. Some new artists this week in our playlist.
Yes, yes. Which is shocking, but yes.
Yes. So yeah, I think that is it.
Yep.
So until next week.
Next week. We'll see you.
Bye.
Bye.